Hello and welcome back to Railway Mania. Returning to the podcast is none other than Chris Eden Green of Steam Locos in Profile. Thanks for joining us once again, Chris.
Hi, Corbin. Thanks for having me back.
Today we're here to talk about the triumphant return of Slips after the COVID pandemic. And this has taken the form of what I would call a feature-length epic set at Imlek. But can you just explain for us, what is Imlek?
So Imlek is shorthand for the International Model Locomotive Efficiency Competition, which is essentially what it says on the tin. It's the ultimate test of thermal efficiency on 3.5, in this case it was 3.5-inch and 5-inch gauge model steam engines. Contending locos from all over the country, in this case, got together at a track, and they do as many laps as possible on a chosen amount of coal with a chosen amount of weight behind them against the clock to see how thermally efficient they are, how little coal they use on how much work they do.
It's kind of like a reimagining of the Rainhill Trials a little bit.
In a manner of speaking, you could argue like that, but it's quite fun in that regard.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds fun. And I like the idea that... So is it a two-day event?
On this occasion, it was 3 days.
Wow. Okay. Whoa. So I bet it was an epic to film as well.
We needed more than the usual pool of about 3 operators this time. I think we incorporated about 6 or 7 on this occasion. Yeah, I got some help in from Will Hawks and the guys over at Online Models Limited, who you might have seen on Great Model Railway Challenge and Biggest Little Railway. Mm-hmm. So it was good of them to help out. But it was just as well that they did, because it was a lot of work.
Definitely, yeah. And lots of parts of the track to cover all at once. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. So I want to find out from you, how did you find out about Imlek, and why did you choose to set an episode there?
So I was asked by a friend of mine, by Tom Parham, who's the secretary of the Maidstone Model Engineering Society, which is my local club, if I would be interested in doing this. He got to me, I think it was the summer of 2019, so it was pre-COVID, and said, we're hosting this event, and he told me a little bit about it. Would you be interested in maybe doing a special on it? And my initial thoughts over the first couple of hours were, this sounds like an awful lot of work. I'm not sure if I can really incorporate it into an ordinary episode. But then thinking about it, given the time that we're living in now, when there was already a lot of talk in the railway press around then about the coal situation, how it's likely to drastically change within the next couple of years. And we're slowly beginning to see that change, what with the closure of more coal mines in this country and the ending of the supply of Welsh coal next year. So these could be interesting times ahead for us, and I think monitoring efficiency could become all the more important, even if it's just, in this case, it was just a bit of fun, because this event has been run since 1969 and has only stopped or not been run for 2 years, firstly during COVID and the other one during the foot and mouth outbreak in 2001.
Oh, wow.
But otherwise, yeah, given the context that we're living in, I think more efficiency competitions like this could become more important as time goes by.
Maybe we'll see a 12 inches to the foot efficiency competition at some point. I'd love to see that.
Well, you're not the only one. I mean, I've been dreaming about where would you hold something like this on a one-to-one scale. But yeah, this was going to happen in 2020, but then obviously the great thing happened. What's going to happen then? Unfortunately, it was pushed back until August this year. It was going to be July, and then it was pushed back even further. But yeah, it was just a welcome return to form when it did come back.
Mm-hmm, definitely, yeah. And then how did you go about planning for this event? Because you obviously had to put together quite a big team. Did you have a clear idea in your mind about how the day was going to pan out?
I had no clue how it was all going to pan out, to be honest. It was a case of just get as many people together as you possibly can that you know could at least cover the track and provide the shots that you could get, the action you could get, who sort of know what they're doing without needing too much guidance, but also have an idea of what it is you would like as a director. You know, just hoping for the best that something good comes out of it. I think Sam Brown and I, one of my camera operators, we went down to the track about 2 months before for a recce just to look around all of the corners of the track, because it was a big circuit to cover. It's 1,826 feet of 3.5-inch and 5-inch gauge raised track, which, as they worked out in scale terms, is about 4.1 miles in scale miles. So there was a lot of ground to cover.
Well, plenty of people to talk to as well. I mean, during the day, you presumably had to grab people, take them to one side, say, can we interview you about your locomotive, what you bought, why you're here? How do you think it's going to go?
Absolutely, yeah. And there were even more were going to enter, but then we had two dropouts, and then another one did turn up, but without a valid boiler certificate, so he was turned away.
Whoops.
Unfortunately, he turned away before we could get that on camera.
I think what was great about this was that, I admit now, I've not really been into miniature steam locos. I should clarify, it's the locos that are miniature, not the steam. Mm-hmm. The steam is normal sized. But this made me want to learn more about them, and it got me excited about it. And how did you go about thinking how you're going to inject a sense of narrative and excitement into this?
Just by how the action unfolded, really. You can think of it almost like a relay race or the Olympics or anything, like any kind of sport like that.
I guess it is the closest thing we get to a sporting event in railway terms.
Basically, yeah, because it's especially seeing as logistically, as much as we would love to see something like this on a scale of 1-to-1, it would be a nightmare to organise and extremely costly. And as far as a spectator sport goes, there is a very limited sort of interest in it. When you think that railway enthusiasm in itself has a limited niche interest, miniature steam is even more niche than that.
I think that railway enthusiasts often get accused of being quite loco-centric, but I think that's entirely justified in this sense, because the locos are the centrepiece. I mean, yes. The track, I mean, you have these sort of raised tracks. It's about, I'd say, is it three foot off the floor?
More or less.
Yeah, 3 foot off the floor, and your legs dangle down on either side, and the loco pulls. The loco is a scaled down model of the real thing, but the carriages and whatnot are generally freelance, well, or just built for purpose, I guess you could say. So this is your classic sort of miniature railway ride. The locos really are, well, you can tell the owners love them, and they've got a lot of pride in them. That definitely comes across in the video.
Absolutely, yeah. Even if some of them were a little bit dodgy, poor things. That's the locos, so it's not the owners.
Not the owners. No names. And I think that what's really amazing that really came across in that sense of pride is the craft that goes into these things. This is real engineering. It's not like what I do, where I'm sort of muck around with bits of plastic and everything else like that. This is genuine steam technology and engineering that goes into this.
A lot of people underestimate that these locos, even though they're much, much smaller than the full-size prototypes, they still have to undergo the same level of testing that a full-size locomotive does, because whether it's a 1/16th the scale of the full thing or it's the full thing, it's still a ticking time bomb if you get it wrong.
Mm, yeah, it can be dangerous.
And of course, things do fall off if you get it wrong, as we might have noticed.
I was thinking about how we're going to word these things. So we're going to hint at events. I don't want to spoil too much, because I think that if you haven't seen this video, you should just go and watch it. So if you haven't seen it, and you're worried about anything getting spoiled, pause this, go and watch it, and then come back to us.
Please do.
It's a riot. So I want to talk about the drama, because I think this is what really got me quite excited. There are instances in the video where everything's going swimmingly for people, and then disaster hits. And it's just like, I mean, it felt like a sporting event. It felt like your team was losing, the person you were rooting for, like tripping over something and falling during a race. It's that kind of feel. We saw a loco spectacularly drop its rod and almost take a leap off the track at one point. And it's amazing that you managed to capture these events on camera as well, because I think that that's where having this larger team comes into its own, because you were able to actually, you know, document that happening.
I had no idea going in that anything like that was going to happen. I did sort of brief my crew a few days before that in the event of locomotives at least stopping for blow-ups, that they weren't specifically to go out and help, but they were to at least try to capture it on camera, because that sort of thing does make good drama. And sure enough, there were quite a few blow-ups during the event, but I think one of them had its tender come off a few times. One of them, as you say, did throw a rod, even when it was doing really well after a few laps.
And my heart jumped when that happened. It was just, you know, I thought it was going to tip over. I thought it was going to go over the side. Oh, God, it was awful.
Yeah, then there was another one where its motion seized up solid after a few laps.
At first, so I thought he was just doing some sort of, like, sweet skid, but that is actually much worse than that. Not intentional at all.
Yeah, those two instances, the locked motion and the rod throwing, were like shots that you wouldn't really anticipate getting, but they were just sheer luck.
Yeah. And how did the owners take that kind of thing? Because obviously, you know, it can be real kick in the teeth when something like that happens. And I mean, how were they? Were they quite sanguine about it, or were they gutted? Like, how did they feel?
There were one or two that were quite gutted to not do as well as they anticipated. I think the first run, which there were a few complications with the very first competitor who sadly retired. He he didn't even manage to get around a full lap of the track because he kept slipping to a stand, poor thing.
Oof. I mean, that's the worst thing about going first, isn't it? Because, I mean, are there going to be problems with, like, dew in the air? Are the rails going to be moist? Is it problems with anything else not going to be ironed out? And everybody's looking at you and expecting things?
Yeah, I don't know the full facts of what entirely went wrong because the owner only told me so much of what was going on. But one of the reasons was partly due to the track not being fully dry. But it couldn't have helped that he also perhaps might have overloaded a little bit too much. But, I mean... Audience be the best judge.
You want to flex. People are watching. You want to flex as much as you want, but not enough to fail. So, yeah.
Yeah, audience be the best judge of that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the event was also marked by tragedy. One of the owners had passed away that day. This was awful. And this was, again, one of those moments in the film that just shocked me. Unbelievable.
That one took everyone by surprise.
Yeah.
We'd learned, my crew and I learned within about half an hour of getting to the track and starting to set things up. And the secretary came up to me, who was helping to organise the event, came up to me and said, there's been some complications with that entrant over there because the owner of that engine died this morning.
It's and awful.
I think it was his uncle who was entering it on his behalf.
Mm.
And bless him, he did end up in the top 10.
Yeah, which was
really nice to
see.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a great tribute to the owner. Really. I think everyone must have just been shocked. I mean, he's the same age as me.
He was just 35.
Yeah.
Which was the biggest shocker.
It was just a real awful, awful business. But it's amazing that they decided to actually enter the loco and it was able to pay tribute to him in that way.
The really sporting thing for me in that regard was that his uncle, who entered the loco on his behalf, was actually entering his own loco later on in the competition. So you think that you got nephew and uncle competing effectively against each other, and yet because of everything that happened, one decided to drop out and run the other's engine on his behalf, which was really nice, I think.
Yeah, it is really nice. And also, I think that there is this air of competitiveness in the event, but at the end of the day, it's quite sporting and it's for fun, really, isn't it? How much competitiveness was there between the people who were entering locos?
I was expecting more than we got, to be honest. I was expecting a few people being in quite fierce competition of each other, but then going in, you have no idea what to expect.
Yeah. Do you think there was a sense of trepidation because of the amount of time it had been since the last event?
There were a lot of people who were just happy to be there, particularly because, you know, it was the first thing that happened after lots of people had passed because of the bloody bat plague.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know what previous competitions had been like, but this year was they were quite agnatic about the competitiveness aspect.
Yeah.
Most of them were just happy to be amongst people of the same, like, sort of minds.
Yeah.
It proves that the power of steam can unite the masses, regardless of competition.
Yeah, absolutely. There were also a few surprises, I think. If you were to ask me, if you were to show me the lineup beforehand, I would not have picked the ones that came out on top necessarily. I would just assume that, you know, big loco, more wheels, more adhesion would dominate it. But of course, this is about efficiency.
Yeah.
It's not just about power and tractive effort and your ability to pull, I don't know, 20 people or however many passengers you have. This is about... This is quite a complicated bit of maths that I couldn't really get my head around. So can you just summarise for me what the aspects that are involved in calculating the scores are?
Well, putting it as simply as possible, the locomotive's distance travelled, drawbar horsepower and average speed are calculated using a dynamometer car, which is part of the train's formation.
Just like the real thing?
Just like the real thing, and they cover as much distance as possible in the time frame of about 30 minutes. They're allowed to stop after 25, if they so wish. But if they start their last lap of the track within that 30-minute time frame, just before 30 minutes are up, then they've got another 5 minutes to finish that lap and get back to the start line, to the station. And once they finish their run, those figures are then calculated against the amount of coal that they have burned. They're allowed to use as much water as they like, and it's usually collected on the move. TPO style.
That was some great scenes there when you really felt like the energy is going. It's like, need to pick up some water, like just grab it from a passenger on the platform.
Yeah, in empty milk bottles as well. It's quite yes. quite confusing, actually. They're putting in milk or actual water? I don't know. From what I can understand, they're allowed to use as much wood, charcoal and meths and so on to raise steam. But then the amount of coal is calculated as soon as you start burning it, even if you're using it just to light up.
Really? I did not realise that. I thought it was from the start of the run.
You'd think it was from the start of the run, but there's some reason which I haven't quite got my head around myself as to why they do it that way, but I think that's probably where some people who you might have thought would do as well as they did didn't, because they didn't quite get as much actual hard coal on the fire as possible before.
I had not realised this. Yeah.
Before they started off.
And of course, that's why knowing when your slot is must be really important, because you don't want to start raising steam too early, because you'll just end up burning fuel.
Exactly.
Yeah, you want to time it right, but you also want to be at sort of maximum working pressure just before you set off.
You do, yeah. It gets even more complicated when you realise that, obviously, because these are, some of them may be built as scale models of the full size thing, but they're not necessarily engineered as such. So you think that just because it's a 5-inch gauge loco, it doesn't have the same scale of heating surface inside the boiler. It may have slightly more for what the scale loco would have. It may have slightly less. Some of them, being freelance, they have their own bespoke sort of heating surface within them.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, because they've usually got boiler tubes which are the size of pinky fingers and fire grates which are the size of a pack of cigarettes, they need really hard coal, more preferably anthracite coal, in order to steam as efficiently as possible. They can't make do with bitumous coal that clinkers like there's no tomorrow, because that just stifles them.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and one of the other things is that you're a single-man team when you go out there. So you are doing the job of the driver and the fireman. So you've not only got to look out for wheel slip, which can be a killer, especially when you're going up the bank and you lose traction. And, you know, there were people who were competing who had to go all the way back down to the bottom of the slope and try again. So you're not only doing that, at the same time, you've got to keep the pressure up, because if you stop, you've got to stop for a blow up, which is into your time. And your fuel, obviously, all at the same time. So you're doing two people's jobs at once on top of everything else.
Yeah, the club secretary, Tom, was also telling me that we've both had people say to us that if you can fire a Super D on a bad day, then you really are an engineman. But even engineman like that, well, as soon as you plonk them on a miniature, they'll be brought to their knees, because really, everything happens so much quicker.
Yeah.
You know, you, especially with things which have got the boiler capacity of less than an office tea urn, let's be honest. Maybe even less than your average kettle. So they get through water very, very quickly, but they still have boiler pressures of 80, 100, 120 PSI, some of them.
Wow.
It's insane.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's quite a lot of these locos have quite a history as well. Like, they're not all brand new. Some of them have been through several owners and rebuilds over the years, and it was passed down like heirlooms some of the time.
Yeah.
What were some of the stories that jumped out at you? There's one that I'm thinking of, but tell me about one of yours first.
Well, the one I was impressed with was the Britannia that started out in life as a kit made by Winson Engineering. And Winson, for those who don't know the firm, they had this idea in the late 90s and early 2000s where you could assemble locos in kit form with no previous engineering experience necessary. You could be a rookie and assemble a Britannia in about 300 odd hours, according to the advert. But their quality control was so bad that the kits didn't go together properly. You ended up needing to have engineering experience in order to make them work properly. And according to the owner of this Britannia that was entered, he had to throw 40% of his original engine in the bin because it was useless. And had to engineer those bits from scratch.
That's galling. So you had to become an engineer just to finish the kit.
Yeah. I mean, it helps that he was an engineering student at University of Leeds, so nice. He was at least studying the craft.
Yeah.
He had a good friend that was helping him out with rebuilding it as well, so that helps.
Yeah. And were there many of those Winson engines there?
As far as I'm aware, that was the only Winson loco there, at least according to the brochure.
Yeah, I was wondering what the ratio of kits sold to kits built actually was, and how many are still lying in garages in pieces because of that.
Well, I mean, the loco that really caught my attention was the Gresley P1282. Anyone who's familiar with that thing would know it was a class of just two engines. It was essentially a freight engine version of the Gresley A3s, but they proved too powerful in service.
Yeah, but too good. Too good for the network.
Essentially, yeah. The unique thing about them was that they had a powered Kartatsi bogie underneath the cab.
So this is a booster?
Essentially, it's a booster.
So Gresley went through a phase of really liking these and tried a few out on a few different locos, didn't he? Because there were a few Atlantics that were fitted with them too.
Yes, they ended up just wasting the fuel without actually seeing the benefits of the additional power, which is partly what led to the P1s being scrapped in 1945 after being built 20 years previous.
Yeah.
But it was an impressive loco, but it's just a shame that it didn't do quite as well as I might have anticipated.
Spoiler alert!
but you never know. It might have done better than you would anticipate.
Well, yeah, exactly. Who can say? Who can say? Am I right in thinking they had a working booster on the Loco?
That one had a working booster, but that one was powered by compressed air, it turns out. So it wasn't actually
still,
cold.
Though. It's still mind-blowing that someone would go to the trouble of doing that on a Loco that small.
Yeah.
At the other end of the spectrum, for me, that stood out was the one that was seen to be finished. Well, they were still building it on the way there. This is one that, when it was entered into the competition, it was a set of frames. And actually, when it turned up, I mean, it's painted black. It's very much like a, you know, Loco that's going through running. It doesn't have the buffers fitted at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that was amazing. Did you say that they were still assembling bits of it as they were going along?
The valve gear had been reset on a park bench at a motorway service station on its journey to the track that morning. It was that close to finishing.
Amazing.
I commend it for getting round. It's just a shame that it didn't do quite as well as it could have done.
Well, I mean, I'll cut them some slack considering the circumstances.
Yeah. Yeah, they did well to do what they did. So, kudos.
Yeah. And I think that there's an interesting comparison with this kind of event. And there's a few events run in the classic car world with economy rallies where it's about navigation and you've got to navigate from point to point. But also it was about using the least amount of fuel at the same time. So this aspect of it being an economy thing, and it's not just about speed. It's not just about how much you can pull. Am I right in thinking there is a speed limit on the track?
There was a speed limit on the track of 8 miles an hour.
So there's a theoretical limit to the amount of laps you can run then in that case.
You could put it that way, yes. Mm. The rules stated that if you broke that speed limit 3 times, then you would technically be disqualified. Oof. And to be fair, you can only go so fast on that track before you risk falling off. Because if you derail, you don't just come a little bit off the track. You literally have the Loco tumble over on its head.
Yeah, and you don't want that. Not with something so fine. In some of the footage, if you'd shown it to me, I would have said that sped up. So some of these machines are running at, did you say, is it scale speeds? Like 75 plus?
Some of them were running at, if you put them in scale speeds, some of them were running above what they could achieve in reality.
Wow.
Like there was a 7F in there, which, again, spoiler alert, which if you read all the books and hear all the stories, then you'd think that, well, you would know that the 7Fs were believed to have done about 60 miles an hour if the driver had big enough kahunas. but the one that was entered, if you saw it going round, you'd think it was doing nearer 75, 78, 80 miles an hour.
Which reminds me of those stories of like 9Fs doing 90 until they got told not to, and that kind of thing. It's just, yeah, amazing scenes. And again, it just looked sped up because of the speed at which the valve gear is spinning round and everything else like that. It's great.
It proves how well engineered some of them are. I mean, obviously they wouldn't be able to do those speeds if they weren't built in such a way that they wouldn't just thrash themselves to pieces when they were going full tilt.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's why I'm excluded from building that kind of stuff. My tolerances are not that
bad. No, really?
So, in hindsight, looking back at the film, I really hope you're happy with it because it really is a riot and it's so much fun to watch and it's full of, you know, the drama of the day and the event and you don't know what's going to happen next. There's so many surprises in it. So, how do you feel about how it went?
All things considered, I think it was certainly something that was well worth doing and I'm glad that people have enjoyed it as much as they have.
Yeah.
You know, we've had some really nice comments about it.
The reception so far has been brilliant. Yeah,
yeah. And, you know, it's got people interested in competing next year who previously would not have even known that it existed.
Yeah.
Which is really nice.
Are you tempted?
Are you kidding me? I gave up engineering 11 years ago. I couldn't stand a chance.
And are there any plans to do more slips in the smaller scales?
Well, the thoughts are there, but at the moment, it's just a case of carrying on with what I was intending to carry on with before the back plate hit us.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we could end up doing more small scale stuff at this point in time. I just don't know, but I guess we'll see what happens. There's already calls for us to do the same event again next year, but
oh, I bet there.
Who knows?
Yeah.
We may be elsewhere at that point. It's something which I'd like to do again. I just wouldn't like to go through the editing process again because it damn near killed me. But we won't go into that.
So much
footage. Nobody wants to know about that.
So much footage. I mean, I can empathise. Yeah, I mean, any sort of live event coverage, you must just generate hours and hours and hours of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about what's coming up for you on the channel. So you have something quite exciting in the works, which is further than you've gone before.
Much further than we've gone before. Boldly go where no slip engineer has gone before. So, to celebrate 10 years of the show in 2022, I thought about answering some of my fans' requests, about one third of my audience's requests, to do something in the United States of America. And so I looked into a few things, I asked around, I costed several things up, and I worked out that provided that we get the finance in, which is happening via a crowdfunder as we speak, we should be able to produce about up to nine films about individual classes of steam engines in the States. That's provided that we get about 30 grand tops.
Fantastic. Yeah, great. And so if people want to see this and they want to see you go to the States, where can they go to contribute?
So they can go to the website to contribute at egmedia.co.uk/slips in the USA. That's all in one word, in lowercase. We've so far, as of recording this, we've got literally just under £10,000
wow.
in the bank, which is almost it's enough to cover one of the types of engine that we have looked into, which is the Jones and Laughlin Steelworks Porter switchers, 23-inch gauge switchers. It's almost enough. If we've achieved £10,000 or above, we'll manage to secure enough to review the Mount Washington Cog steam locomotive fleet.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, and the 40s of the main narrow gauge system. That'll be quite nice to see. If we achieve above that, then we go on to, hopefully we'll go on to the likes of the DNRG Mikados, the classic 440s. If we get enough money, then we could produce something on the big boys, the Berkshires, and everyone's favourite movie star, Sierra Number 3.
Fantastic.
With a bit of luck.
So if anyone does want to contribute, please do visit the website.
Please do.
And you can do a one-off donation or a monthly contribution. And then in the immediate future, what's coming up in the programme for Slips and the channel in general?
Well, now that things are slowly beginning to calm down a bit outside, we can get on and work on producing Volume 6, which we had to hope to do last year, but guess what happened? So hopefully the first few episodes will be coming out in the next couple of weeks, next couple of months. Plan is to try and get something out every month between sort of November and March before we then go out to the States. But in the very short term, I've also got another DVD coming out. This is where I apologise for the shameless plugs. I hate doing them, believe me.
yeah, come on, it's fine.
I've got another DVD coming out, which is called Manx and Miniatures, which, as you can probably guess by the title, is all about the stuff on the Isle of Man and a couple of miniature types, although scaled up. They're not 3.5 inch to 5 inch. They're two types on 10.25 inch. Although looking at one of them, you think it was even bigger because it's essentially a narrow gauge engine that's doing standard gauge work.
Okay. Oh, excellent. Can you give us a hint as to what's coming? Can you give us a little teaser as to what's coming up on the channel?
I suppose I've got no choice. On the channel, we just got more steam locos in profile and eventually more gauge the issue. You thought I was going to give classes away then, didn't you?
I thought
you?
I was going to get some sort of Rail Mini exclusive tidbit of information. I have to wait and see.
Yeah, you should be so lucky.
Excellent.
Well, if you tune in and find out, then you'll know.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
all I can say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I look forward to it. And, well, great work. I mean, I enjoyed it so much. And I really hope that, you know, that the USA trip goes well and you manage to hit your targets. And here's to the future.
Thank you. Thank you for having the patience to put up with my work.
It's been a pleasure, Chris, as always. Hopefully see you soon.
Thank you. Thanks again, Corwin. Take it easy.
Huge thanks to Chris for coming on the show. And since we recorded this, I've heard that he's actually surpassed the £10,000 target, which is fantastic. If you'd like to contribute to his crowdfunder for Slips in the USA, please follow the links in the description. That's it from me. Thanks very much for listening. Please stay tuned for more Railway Mania soon.